So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, Man fans. Ollie Mann here, slightly out of breath today because I've just been for a walk in the rain. Perfect conditions for broadcasting. It's just light shortness of breath. And audibly so. I hope you're very well. This is episode 5, which is about the point that Homeland got amazing. I don't think I'm quite going to be able to follow that trajectory, but I will do my best with no writers at all. Think of it like all of those are big American shows during the writer's strike. The middle section of the show today, actually, talking of great writers, is me talking to two really good stand-up comics, Stuart Goldsmith and Tom Price, about our impending fatherhood. All of us are going to be dads. So I think you'll enjoy that, even if you're not about to be a dad, although if you are, you're going to particularly enjoy that. Before the show begins, though, what treat do I have in the mailbag? Chris in County Durham has sent me a note to say how much he enjoys the show. Thank you, Chris. He says, having bought you a beer, I feel that I can consider myself a member of your fan club. Yep, you get fast-tracked. Living outside London, he says, perhaps I'm not a full member. I like to think of myself as a country member. I'm a little bit concerned, actually, Chris, that you feel you have to be a Londonite to get the full benefits of this show. I'm from Hertfordshire. Ollie is from Reading. Alex is from some northern backwater. You can hear it in her accent. Leeds, I think. So, yeah, we're from all over the country. But I do quite like the idea of London waiting. Perhaps if you are from London, you can afford to buy us two beers. Speaking of which, thank you to all the beer donors of the week. Dave, Daryl, Jamie, Anders, Tom, Mr. Thompson, Jace, Wayne, Simon, Caton and Sam. I love all of you far too much. Thank you for supporting this show. Right, in this episode, you're going to learn why mucus plugs have no place in the male brain, how to make a really awful pun out of the name of Australia's national airline, and how to do an enema in the privacy of your own home. This show is nothing if not varied. Let's go. On this week's Modern Man.
They don't know that they've got arms, so as far as they're concerned, these two big pink things keep hitting them in the face.
How to be a dad-to-be.
The way the colon works, it can actually sort of vacuum things up.
And Alex Fox gives us an A-level crash course in bum play. But first, it is time for the Zeitgeist. Ollie Peart is here. He's high on coffee today.
Jittering.
But what is hot in your Zeitgeist hot list of hot hotness?
It's the end of men.
Nothing less.
Well, FHM and Zoo are no more.
Yeah, they've... Okay, so this is Bauer, the publisher, isn't it, have decided to close down what used to be two massive opportunities for the teenage boy to express himself through onanism.
Absolutely. At its peak, FHM was, I think, selling 1 million copies a month. God, can you imagine what that equates to in tissue use?
Do you have a favourite FHM souvenir issue that you recall fondly now as I say the words?
I never bought it, but I used to go to boarding school, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And I remember them circulating quite a lot.
The boys, you know, or the magazine?
The magazine. All right. The magazines.
Right, yeah.
I don't know how used they were.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they were around. One of the issues I do remember quite distinctly is when they used to do the top 100 sexiest women of all time in the world.
It was a big event, that.
Huge. It was big. Who do you reckon the first person to win it was?
The first person to win FHM's hottest 100 women in the world.
In 1995 was...
Wow, that's going back a while. Jennifer Saunders.
What? Jennifer Saunders?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a 90s personality.
Claudia Schiffer.
Oh, yeah.
She won it.
That is retro, isn't it?
Yeah. Keira Knightley was the youngest winner, age 21.
Keira Knightley, that's an interesting thing because in the heyday of FHM, it's all about boobs, wasn't it? So she would have been deemed flat-chested. She would have been deemed not the right kind of body shape. They changed, didn't they, in later years? And also the actual magazine features weren't as like numbskull-headed as people suggest. It was a men's magazine.
Yeah.
It just could never quite win back the audience of enthusiastic 14-year-olds that lapped it up in the 2000s.
Well, it's because, let's face it, the internet does it better, doesn't it?
Well, you see, but does it? Because the internet does hardcore pornography.
Mm.
Now, looking back at it, even I'm sure the feminists listening to this will be like, well, it was degrading. And like I say, it was all about big boobs and, you know, put impossible expectations on girlfriends and all the rest of it. But in a way, there's something innocent about that compared to watching, you know, compared to being 5 seconds away from an oral jizz fest. Right, what's next?
Well, I want to talk to you about bucks now then.
Bucks?
B-U-X.
B-U-X?
Yeah.
Is it a cryptocurrency?
Ooh, you're close.
Am I?
Yeah.
I actually really like guessing what a startup does just from its name. It's one of the things that I really enjoy doing.
Well, I'm completely addicted to this thing. What it is it's a trading app. So it's like stocks and shares and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, is this going to be one of those really embarrassing moments where I have to talk a friend down from being in a pyramid scheme without sounding patronising?
No. This is really cool, right? So
okay.
What they've
You've worried me a bit.
Yeah, and that's coming from the man who said invest in whiskey last week.
Well, no, I had a sceptical air and I did get a free drink last week. I think you should always approach every investment with a free drink.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What this app's done is it's gamified trading stocks and shares. It's made it really easy and accessible. If you want to go in and trade stocks, one, you need...
I wouldn't know how to do it.
You need a shitload of money. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No one would know how it works unless you've been trained and you know what you're talking about. So it's really inaccessible. And they kind of do that to keep the plebs out, like people like us.
Yeah.
So this app's been created to stop that.
But also, just on that, you know when people bet on the horses?
Yeah.
And they don't know anything about horse form? So actually what they do, instead of doing what they should do, which is like leaf through the Racing Post in detail and say, this one fell at that hurdle and did that, and it's, you know, the trainer is this, or looking at the horse and saying, good hind legs on that one, they say, that's got a funny name, Fat Chance, I'll put money on that. I'm called Ollie, I'll bet on the horse called Ollie. I'd be like that with stocks and shares.
Yeah.
I'd be like, Burger King, I've heard of them. I wouldn't think, is this going up or down? What are my projections for the future?
I know what you mean. But with it, you can still make a little bit of an educated guess, even if you're not really into that. I mean, you can kind of go, Volkswagen, for example.
That's going down.
Well, no.
Oh.
It's not. It's going up.
It's
going up.
But is it going up because it went horribly down?
Because it went horribly down.
Yeah, okay. So my dad bought a load of shares in RBS on that principle, and he's still waiting.
He'll be waiting a long time.
2007, he was like, hello, early retirement. No one's going to have a problem with RBS in the future.
But that's it. The principle's really easy. You know, buy low, sell high. And it has gamified it really, really well. So it's a really intuitive, easy-to-use app. I know nothing. I know absolutely nothing about trading stocks and shares.
Is it free to use? I mean, obviously you have to put your money in.
No, yeah. So you can start off with fun bucks, they call it, which is fake money. And then you can invest your own money, actual real money.
That's even legal. So they get you hooked on it before you're even doing
it. Oh, man. It is incredibly addictive. The trading fees are much, much less. So if you open a trade, it's like 25p compared to what it would be for stocks and shares, would be like quite considerably more.
I fear what would happen if I got into it is I'd end up spending all the money I earn buying companies that I've never heard of.
Let's do this. I want you to do it. I download it. You can start with 50 quid.
We're just
You're
about
loaded.
To play in an ad, Ollie, where I ask people to give us money to pay for this show.
No.
You're asking me to put 50 quid.
Put 50 quid in. Let's see how much you can add onto your 50 quid. By next week.
Okay. All right.
Do that.
Okay.
And then
I'll tell
you
why I'm kind of intrigued by this.
Go on.
It's because I'm pretty sure under Ofcom broadcasting codes, we wouldn't be able to do that on the radio.
Right, okay.
So I just think, all right.
Yeah,
it's a feature you'll never hear on the radio.
Yeah.
How much money can a man lose through gambling? Let's come back in 7 days' time and see. And do you stand to lose the whole 50 quid? Or
you can set a setting on there that's called auto-close. Okay. So if it drops a certain percentage, you only lose that.
What's our final hot story of the week, Ollie Pitt?
Simple one.
Yeah.
David Cameron is going to get his own aeroplane. But what should we call it? I mean, the US has Air Force One, and Twitter has come up with some brilliant names.
All right.
You ready for some?
Yeah.
So you've got Air Farce One. It's a bit weak, isn't it? I quite like this one. Swine Flu. Flu spell FLEW. That's quite good.
Is that a reference to the Oakshot book, Ollie?
To what?
You know, the pig fucking book.
Yeah, it is.
I just think if the joke needs explaining.
Well, I think mine are better.
Yeah.
Virgin on taking the piss, one of mine. What do you think? Do you like that one? And Ideria, isn't that as in it's expensive? No?
I don't even get it.
Looking at me. Well, it's expensive. Dear. Ideria. It needs explaining.
Oof.
Sling the poor airlines.
That's very good.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Luftbackhansa. Do you like that one?
I do like that one.
Air Canada. This one's a bit weak. Air Swiner, as in Air China. Air Swiner.
Yeah.
Swine.
I think the best thing to do, Ollie, when you're creating a comedy list,
yes,
is to self-select first which are the three best ones and open with those.
But it's much better doing it on the podcast, isn't it?
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm happy to sort of work through ideas with you in this setting. I just wonder if, you know, in future, if you do down your own joke before you say it, it's difficult for the audience to have confidence.
Mm.
You know, just come straight out with a big one.
Cunt ass. As in Qantas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you
it's
like
not
that?
Even very good. It's bad. But you see, the confidence made me laugh.
But I quite like to get the listeners involved. I'd like them to send theirs in.
Okay.
Because I reckon that they'll come up with some much better ones than we've come up with.
Okay. So names for David Cameron's private jet.
Yeah.
Tweet them to you.
Yeah. Or at The Modern Man or at Ollie EP. OLLIEP.
And that is also the place to send any ideas you have, really, for future trends you'd like to hear Ollie talk about here in the Zeitgeist.
Yes, please. It saves me having to do all the research myself.
Okay, and I'll see you next week when I've lost 50 quid in a pointless app. Look
you
forward to
you'll
it.
You won't, you'll make money,
yeah,
Ollie!
Let's see.
See you next week.
This show is free to download, but it is not free to produce. We're all doing this currently for nothing. If you're enjoying the show and you would like to buy us a beer to thank us, just head to modernman.co.uk and click Beer Money. The average cost of a pint of beer in Britain is £3.31, about $5. Using my secure website, you can choose to buy us a beer once or more regularly. If you value independent podcasts like this one and you can afford it, then why not sign up to buy us just one beer a month in return for this magnificent show? And if we ever meet, the next one's on me. Head to modernman.co.uk and click Beer Money. Thanks. Now, as exclusively announced on my other podcast, Answer Me This, a few weeks ago, I am to be a father. Man Jr. is, fingers crossed, on his way out in January. I did actually tell my family, by the way, before I mentioned it in a podcast. They're very excited about it as well because it's their first grandchild. So I feel a sense that my whole life is about to change. But as a man, it's quite hard to predict exactly how. I mean, so far, really all that's happened whilst my partner's body is changing a lot is I've had a lot of trips to mothercare. I'd never been to mothercare before in my life. I've now been about four times in the last 3 months. Anyway, it just so happened that two of my mates, Stuart Goldsmith and Tom Price, who also happen to be comedians, so are very entertaining men, are also due to have babies in the next 8 weeks. Well, their partners are. So I couldn't resist inviting them round for a chat. But inevitably, we began by talking about NCT, because that's one thing that every middle-class bloke gets involved with anyway, the antenatal classes laid on by the National Childbirth Trust.
I have heard that NCT is, by and large, pointless, apart from in order to make friends amongst the locals.
It's like a book club, but for breeders. You know, you all get there, and it's not really about the book, is it? It's about meeting nice people, and it is fantastic. It's really useful, because you will meet a couple of people who you know over the first, certainly the first 3 years. We've still got friends who we did hypnobirthing with, who are really good friends now, because you're going on this experience together, and it's really nice. And I'm very pro it. However, do not expect to learn a single fucking useful piece of information.
See, I disagree with you on that. And it might just be because I was really naive before all of this, and maybe I still am.
Mm.
But I didn't really do any reading, and I don't really watch things set in maternity wards because they kind of freak me out. So my whole life, I've ignored all of the stuff about mucus plugs and placentas.
But you don't need to know about any of these things. Just watch Call the Midwife a couple of times and you'll be fine. But you don't need to know any of that stuff. Really, about mucus plugs and placentas.
Are you just saying that, though, because you're the guy and you personally chose not to get that involved with it? Do you know what I mean? Like you say, like a lot of my male friends have said to me, oh, I haven't read any books, you don't need to. And I have found myself thinking, oh, I mean, I still feel like I haven't read enough books because I would like to know and be supportive.
Yeah. No, I definitely disagree with that. You should definitely read the books and stuff like that. But in terms of that, it was just, I guess it was just Ollie's specific examples there, which I feel very strongly that there's kind of an intimacy when you know that much stuff about what your wife's going through. And I got the vibe from my other half of your partner, whatever, that she was kind of like, do you know what? You don't need to know about this stuff. It's fine. You need to be there and emotionally support me. And there's lots of books on that that are brilliant. But actually knowing about the medical goings on, it's not really going to be that helpful.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I've just been to a midwife appointment just now with my partner. And I had with me on the tube on the way here a leaflet about perineal massage. And I just thought, there's no way to spin this so it looks right for me to be reading this on the gym. Do you know what I mean?
Explain to your listeners what perineal massage is. It's basically GP condoned fingering. That's essentially what it is.
It's exactly what it is, yeah. With a bit of thumbing at the same time, as far as I can work out.
Yeah. But there's also things you can buy. There's like basically inflatable dildos where they use these objects and they inflate insides to make things go better and quicker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's really valuable stuff. It's hilarious. And you know what? It's churlish to pretend that it's not funny. I think you're being an idiot if you go, this is a bit serious, and try and take it seriously. It's fucking hysterical.
Okay, we've already naturally fallen into our roles here. Stuart and I are the exciting ingenues, and Tom is the grizzled veteran in the corner because he's already got one kid, telling us, oh no, you're totally wrong and this is how it works. So Tom, shut up for the next 5 minutes.
Correct.
I'm going to interview Stuart about his excitement about being a father.
Okay.
Then you tell us why we're both completely wrong.
All right, okay.
Okay?
I'm slightly object to how I've been pigeonholed there, but fine. You're right, actually, you're right, yeah.
Stuart.
Hey, man.
Planned, unplanned?
Planned. I've wanted to have a baby. I've wanted to have children for a long time. And I really am. I'm so excited about it.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I've never felt as happy as this. Yeah, I do. I have a younger brother and an older sister. And my older sister has got two kids. I've not been that involved with their lives, in fact, to my shame. But I've got godchildren. I've got an 8-year-old goddaughter and a 10-year-old godson, and I've properly been in at the sharp end of crying and nappies and you know what I mean, all the rest of it. So I feel like I've done that.
That's good. And because you know when people say with children, like giving them a pet, part of the reason for them to have a pet is the pet's going to die.
The pet's going to die,
And that's their training for understanding mortality.
Yes.
I don't have any godchildren. I don't have any brothers or sisters who have children. But I can see that training slope is actually quite useful because I've been put in a position where suddenly I've never thought of myself as even a dad for hire for the day.
Yes, I'm feeling far less scared about babies than I am about children. Of course, there'll be all sorts of terrifying stuff, and I know that there are unknown unknowns and known unknowns and the rest of it. I'm quite good in a crisis. And what scares me is the bit that comes out after the crisis, the sort of the far longer bit of going, oh, I've got a 4-year-old and I've got to make decisions about schools.
How do you think you're going to cope in the initial stages? Because people talk about 3-hour cycles of feeding and all that kind of thing. Obviously, the man doesn't actually have to be there for every single one of those due to our biology. But the modern man principle is that you are kind of there and offering support. And certainly for the first 2 or 3 weeks, you kind of drop everything else.
Yes.
Are you up for that?
Yeah, I'm lucky in that I'm self-employed. So I'm taking a month off and I'm going, right, there we go. That's my paternity leave. I'm less lucky in that shortly after that, I think when the baby is all being well and going to time, when the baby's maybe 7 weeks old, I then go on tour for the first time for 20 dates, which is designed so that I can get back in between. But it's going to be long and knackering and hard, and that bit scares me. In terms of being involved, absolutely. And at the moment, I'm really relishing having a quasi-maternal role looking after my partner. Like, I really like it when she comes home tired after going out and shopping or what have you, and I go, you are looking a bit green around the gills, let me take that, get that, I'm putting you in bed, I'm getting you a hot water bottle, I kind of cluck around. I think my paternal instincts are actually semi-maternal instincts, and I'm quite enjoying looking after her, and then that makes me feel good, so I'm looking forward to supporting her.
Do you know the gender?
Yes, a boy.
It's a boy.
Yeah.
Did you want a boy or did you secretly want a girl?
I secretly wanted a girl.
Me too. And my partner, I'm having a boy too. I secretly wanted a girl.
My partner secretly wanted a girl as well.
Okay, now, why did you secretly want a girl? I secretly wanted a girl purely because at the age of 4 I was worried about football. That's it. Literally just that.
Because at the age of 4 you were worried about football.
No, no, no. I'm worried that when the child is 4, even if he turns out not to be a great sportsman, he's going to be more interested in football than I ever will be my entire life.
Because you're not interested in football.
I'm so uninterested I can't even put it on a scale.
Sure.
So I'm going to have to pretend.
What I imagine will happen is that only people whose dads are interested in football give a shit about football.
My dad's fascinated by motor racing, and I couldn't give a shit about that either.
But you can't play motor racing in the playground with your friends.
Yeah.
So I think there is a difference. But I think, as long as you're passionate about something, which you are,
yeah,
then I am sure that the kid will either become passionate about it or will rebel against it.
Does any 4-year-old say, Daddy, when are you going to take me to the National Theatre? I just don't think it's going to happen.
No, but you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Okay, so what's your reason then?
Well, my reason... Well, first, it's not that we wanted one, but I certainly expected a girl, but just as a numbers game from the other children, the babies in my life and in my family and all the rest of it. And we're both the same in that we were like, well, this one's bound to be a girl. So we got very excited about girls' names. And the thing about girls' names is that you can get a boy's name and make it cool and turn it into a girl's name. If we had a little baby girl, we're going to call her Lenny, uh-huh. L-E-N-I, because like Lenny, but like the yeah. girl version of Lenny.
But that is a boy's name, so you can still use Lenny.
Yeah, but you can't, but Lenny for a boy, it's just a boy called Lenny, whereas Lenny for a girl is like a cool girl version of a boy's name. You can't do the other way around. You can't get like Mildred and turn it into a blokey version of it. You know, it doesn't work.
Mildo,
yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like something Alex Fox would have on the show.
That is one of the rules with naming a child. You really must be careful it doesn't rhyme with anything rude.
Okay. Tom, you've been patiently listening to our little tete-a-tete.
Yes.
What have we missed out?
No, nothing. It's great.
No. Be honest. You're a dad already. What are we being naive about?
Nothing. I mean, it's exactly how I feel right now going into the second one. You know, you're full of optimism and it's just great. There's just a kind of... It's just a gritty reality that it's very hard to communicate without sounding like a bit of a patronising know-it-all.
Please sound like a patronising know-it-all.
So here's the deal. Everything you plan just goes completely out the window and it's like fucking chaos. It's like jumping off the top of a building. This is the situation I had. Everything suffers. Your sleep suffers. Your health suffers. Your relationship suffers. The first year with a child is a notoriously difficult time for a relationship.
Let's be specific about that because I did actually notice that we didn't talk about that, you and I, Stuart. Yeah. I thought, as a mental note, we haven't discussed how this is going to impact our relationships.
Yeah.
And then I thought, that's because we can't know.
You can't know.
So what happens?
You're just really tired. No matter how modern your relationship is in terms of the dividing line between who does what, you know, no matter how that, you know, there is certainly no gender roles in our house. You know, everyone does the washing up. Everyone does everything, of course. And I'm sure most of your listeners are like that. There is a fundamental problem here, which is that biologically, your partner will resent what they have had to go through and how physically attached they are to this thing and how actually nothing's really changed for you. Mm. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, physically you can walk out the door at any point. She can no longer do that because she's stuck to the baby because of feeding, because of whole host of hormonal things that happen. They are glued to the child. And as much, and I had this very firm intention, and it happened as well before because we have silly jobs. We don't have to go to work from 9 to 5 every day. And I was really determined to be around every day and to be in there and in the mix and stuff. But actually, that is very limited because there's really only so much you can do. You have to help her, but in terms of what goes on with the baby, a distance appears between you. No matter how close you are as a couple, the distance appears between. And I don't want to make it sound like really horrific and awful because it's still utterly wonderful. And like, it's the best bit of all of life. It's the best bit. Yeah. So I have to say that all the time.
I have something to add here, which is that I feel, again, probably very naively, I feel like we've got a bit of a secret weapon as a couple, which is that we've lived 100 miles apart for the last 5 years and worked opposite hours. She's got a day job, I've got a wacky evening job. So I have just moved into her house. Right, which has it presents its own kind of challenges in terms of like people go, you didn't even live together. Yeah. No, we didn't. we lived in two cities, and now although I still need to come to London to work, we don't need to live across two cities in the same way. Yeah. So in terms of not seeing each other and the strain on the relationship, I totally take on board what you're saying about the fundamental resentment, and I fear that, and it's interesting to hear that articulated. But I do feel that part of it is we're so thrilled to be in each other's presence that I like people go, oh, it'll be really hard. You're like, it's been really hard. I know it'll be hard different, but it has been really hard.
Yeah, but there's a lot of cocktails that come into play, like hormonally. You know, my wife, Beth, she fully admits it now. She was mad for the first year. We both went mad. We both had massive sleep deprivation. Our brains changed shapes and our personalities changed. So madness is a very trite way of saying we were different people, basically. There's an idealism before it happens. Of course there is, where you're just like, this is magical and amazing. And actually, the reality of it is really tough. But then, oh my God, it's amazing. And there's something which Rufus Hound said to me, it just gets better and better and better. And I was like, yeah, sure. That's when I was 6 months in and Wilfred had colic and it was horrific. And he said it gets better and better and better. And he's absolutely right. It, exponentially every day, it's just incredible.
Well, let's talk about expectations and managing expectations, because it sounds like all of us have some idea of what we've let ourselves in for. But actually, your typical couple in the UK using the NHS, for obvious reasons, all the support being offered is for the mum. You don't, as the man, have to go to see the midwife at any stage. You don't even have to be there for the birth, although I suppose nowadays some questions might be asked. Do you think there's actually adequate support for dads? You know, is there actually the resource out there that perhaps there should be so that men can cope with what's about to hit their lives?
There is definitely stuff out there. You can go after it, but you have to go after it and find it. Whereas, obviously, all the midwives and stuff, that definitely comes to the woman in the situation. One of the most rewarding things I've done is dads stay and play, which is like a Saturday morning nursery near me, and it's only dads allowed with the kids. And I've done that with Wilfred since he was about 3 months old. And it's brilliant because you get to hang out with other dads, and it's just dads. The problem with going to lots of baby things like baby massage and baby yoga, and all it's just nonsense. It's nothing to do, as with NCT, it's nothing to do with what it sets out to be about. It's all to do with who you meet and chatting to people. And I've gone to a lot of those things, and in, you know, trendy North London, where you expect there to be loads of men, it's all women. It's just, that's just the way it is. The men go to the vast majority, like endless, countless occasions where I'd go and be the only man there. And that's difficult, because you've got a different set of experiences to discuss. You can't...
You're not in physical pain. You want someone to share emotional experiences with.
But also, the big problem that women have, and it's a huge issue, is expectations that are put on them. Like breastfeeding. Beth found breastfeeding incredibly difficult, and there's this thing called the Breastapo, who insists you have to breastfeed. And she really struggled with it, and she felt like a failure because she can do it. And eventually she did, but there's all these things. And so you're constantly having to provide that support to them, not to the baby, but to your other half, to say, don't feel like that. And it's hard to convince them not to feel like that. That's a difficult thing because it's so in their DNA, it's so in that chemistry. It's almost like it's with a different person for a while. And as long as you're totally prepared for that, then it's fine.
But you can't really prepare for that. I see why you're putting emphasis on that.
You can't prepare for that. You can't.
Stuart, what's your answer to my question? Do you think there are resources out there to support men in this position?
So far, this conversation now is the main one.
Well, that's
I have
the thing,
to
yeah.
say, yeah. You know, like, this is a really interesting conversation. It's like you said, it's up to me to have these conversations. It would be easy for me to chat to my friends who are dads and go, talk me through the first 6 months. That's not really how men relate to one another. I'm not in the habit of, you know, I'm far more likely to ring up a mate and go, I'm going on my first tour. Give me some hints and tips about that.
Yeah.
Far more likely to discuss work
than
I am to ring up a mate who's a dad and say, right, what can I expect to go wrong? What went wrong for you? What are your top tips? I don't really think in those terms. And I imagine maybe other guys are like me.
And I think partly that's because we don't have a baby inside us. However much you try and be part of this couple that's having this experience together, ultimately, I know in the back of my mind right now, it's not too late for me to run off and live in Cuba.
Oh, mate, absolutely.
That is the key thing. No matter how much our modern society says, you're having it together. Nature still pops up and goes, you're not, she's having the baby.
No, I mean, that is true. Facial birthmark, I walk. Of course that's not true.
The other thing as well that people are very unsupported on, and again, the advice exists out there, but I'm a technology journalist and I've struggled to find it, is advice on which is the stuff that you're supposed to buy that is going to stop the baby dying, and which is the stuff that you're supposed to buy that's a complete fucking waste of time.
So much of the stuff that we've been recommended, every single couple that I'll speak to, and I do more than I talk to dads, I'll talk to couples and go, what are your tips? I've done that a few times. Everyone has conflicted. You don't need one of them. God, this was a godsend. You know, object A is really important. A poddle pod is really important. Oh, it's completely meaningless. You'd never use it. You know, do these nappies. Never do these nappies. All you can do, I think, is just kind of, it's going to be carnage. Try and prepare yourself to be okay with it being carnage. And prepare yourself to be okay with feel like, I'm expecting to feel like it's all going wrong and I can't do anything.
Mm.
So hopefully when I get there, I spoke to a fireman once and I said, just at a party, socially, I went, I've never really met a fireman before. So what's the strategy? What's the tactics? And he went, you'll be sick if I tell you. I said, what do you mean? He said, we turn up and it's carnage. And we just go, oh God, you try and get the fire out.
I find when I'm looking at products in the store, I try and imagine them all coated with shit. And then if I still think, yeah, I'd like that in my house.
It's really weird because actually the reality of the baby is this just this calm little tiny object in the corner of your lives that changes everything. It's so weird that the actual core of it, do you know what I mean? That nucleus that sits in the middle looks like a really harmless, sweet thing. So the number of times you'll go out, you'll be pushing the pram around and people say, oh, he looks so cute. Oh, he's so nice and all that stuff. And you're like, Jesus Christ, you have no idea. At 4 a.m. when he's screaming and like spitting at me. You know, it's really hard.
Oh, are the mittens, is that a real thing?
Yeah, because they scratch their faces.
But that's just like something out of Gremlins, isn't it?
Because they don't know that they've got arms. So as far as they're concerned, these two big pink things keep hitting them in the face.
So listeners may not be aware of this. When you're having a child, one thing they advise you to get is scratch mittens to stop your baby clawing out its own eyes.
Stop your wife from clawing your eyes out as well.
It feels like we're at a stage in our evolution where we shouldn't still be clawing out our own eyes at birth.
Yeah.
It's disappointing to me that that's the stage we're still at.
Yeah.
In older times, babies had much tougher eyes. See, these stupid 21st century babies. They're soft faces.
Fine, just get some goggles. There's a lot of crap to buy. Basically, actually, for the first two or three months, you really don't need much at all. You need a Moses basket, a pram, nappies and some clothes. And
give me a gadget hint, because I like my gadget. I want to know what's the thing that I was like, if I have that, it'll be an easy
life. Definitely get a video baby monitor. That's really good.
Really?
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Now I've instinctively thought audio. Stuart, what have you thought?
I haven't got as far as that. I'm thinking first 6 months is going to be in our room.
Yeah.
I'm not going to leave it alone.
Get one early doors. Video ones are already much better than they were when Wilfred was a baby, which is freakish. But
because it can go on your iPad or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But actually, that would just make me... I'd be sitting here miles away from the child and still be watching it now. There's nothing I
can
do.
And you can do some screen grabs of your child because it's night vision. They look evil because they've got the eyes. So you can confirm my suspicion that my son is evil.
What about the thing that monitors... cot death, basically.
Don't get that.
You see, now,
because
why?
It goes off every night and you shit yourself.
Because you're paranoid.
Yeah, I've got
friends. And so I think the video monitor would make me paranoid. Maybe it's just knowing your own...
Because you can see it. And it's nice to be able to see him. Are you having a boy as well? Do you know him?
Are you having a boy this second time?
Yeah, we're all having boys. Yeah.
You're having another boy?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
A bit gutted. Beth really wanted a girl, and so did I. And I mean,
it's good to commit to record that you were disappointed.
Yeah, hopefully one day.
As you meet him, it'll be a team member, isn't it? Come on. So tell me, listen, because I'm scared about cot death, obviously. Because are there any two worse words when combined in the English language?
Yeah.
But does it? I don't know. It's called sudden infant death syndrome now.
Does that still happen often enough
that we should be worried about it? Because I have to say, part of the reason I ask is I hadn't thought about monitors because I feel like one of the things to do is not shit yourself. And I feel, and again, this might be ludicrous naivety, but I feel like I'm going into it thinking it's not going to suddenly just die for no reason. Stop freaking out. It'll be fine. People have been having babies for thousands and thousands of years.
Equally, I said that babies have been dying from SIDS for thousands and thousands of years as well. It is still very much a serious problem, but it's so much rarer than it was. Because do you remember when we were all quite young, like, do you remember the Anne Diamond thing? That was a huge...
No.
Her son died of cot death, and there was a huge publicity thing about that, and they changed a lot of stuff, and those changes they made then and the things they found out then made a big difference, i.e. you do... they. Don't co-sleep early doors. Don't co-sleep in the first sort of 2 months.
Because you might roll on them?
Yeah, there's various things. You might roll on them, but also because you're breathing all over them.
But sleep in the same room, right? Adjunctive bed.
Yeah, that's cool.
Not
in
the bed.
But not in the bed. That's a really bad idea. Also, do not sleep them on their front. That's the advice. They go on their back. And also, there's things about covers as well, what you do with covers and no pillow, things like that. But everyone will find all this information out.
In about 6 months' time... I would like for us to reconvene.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
Would be okay.
Bringing the children with us.
That could be fun, couldn't it? We could have, what did you call it? A dad and...
Dad stay and play.
Dad stay and
They're
play.
Great.
Dad stay and podcast. Why not? At that meeting, Stuart, how do you think you're going to be feeling?
I think I'll be absolutely 100% getting by whilst shitting myself that I'm not really doing it properly.
And Tom, how do you think you're going to find having a second boy?
I'm going to be shocked because I'm really, really good at dealing with a 3.5-year-old boy. Nailed that. Brilliant. But going back to scratch again, I'm going to be... You'll feel like it's such a big gap. I'm going to feel like a learner again. So I'm going to feel completely chaotic and awful.
And different baby as well. Totally different. Could be totally different. I've seen so many people fall into that trap almost of going, oh, we've had a baby. It's one of those miracle golden ones that sleeps for 9 hours at a thing and never crosses. Let's have another. Boom. Nightmare Hydra.
Assuming it's non-Hydra, then I'll probably be feeling very, very happy because actually once you get to... There's kind of these goalposts with having a young baby. And once you get to like anything after 4 months, 6 months, things get a lot easier.
Tom, I've deliberately not asked you to talk about labour because Stuart and I have yet to experience both the magic and the horror.
There is a
conspiracy. Hold it. In a few words. Don't scare us.
I'm capable of that.
In 6 months' time, we can share our experiences with you.
Okay.
How do you think we'll feel looking back on our labour?
You just won't want to talk about it. That's all you need to know. You just don't want to talk about it. There is something inbuilt in both men and women that makes you forget about those early days. Honestly, I don't remember the first 6 months of Wilfred, and I don't remember a lot of the birth, and Beth feels the same way, and you will just forget about it, and it's just something you can never talk about. There is a conspiracy of silence amongst those who have had kids where they'd never quite tell the truth about how awful it is. It's really bad. But listen, the science and the medicine that we now have, it's incredible what they can do. As soon as that painkiller goes in, it's fine.
Coming up next, Alex Fox joins me to talk sex, the very thing that got us knocked up in the first place. But first, just to let you know, if you enjoyed listening to Stuart and Tom, they both have excellent podcasts, which I would highly recommend. Stuart's is called The Comedian's Comedian. It's a long-form interview between him and a headline stand-up act talking about their creative process. Well worth listening to. I'd highly recommend the Matt Lucas one. And Tom Price hosts a topical comedy show called The Leak, L-E-A-K, on BBC Radio Wales. I know, he is Welsh. He's just from the posh bit. And that is well worth adding to your repertoire of podcasts as well, if you enjoy topical ones like the News Quiz or the Now Show. I'll put links to both of their shows and Stuart's tour dates as well on my website, modernman.co.uk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This, listeners, is the section of the show where Alex Fox answers your sex questions. And Alex, before we get on to what the listeners have been asking you this week, what are you up to? I understand tomorrow you're going to a, what's it called, get on your bike?
No, it's called...
Something like that.
Skirt Club. How skirt did club. You get on your bike?
Because I knew it was about bi-curious, so that's
oh, okay, yeah. Bi-curious, not bike-curious.
Not bike-curious.
Yes, it's a different sexual event for people who are really interested in putting their penises together with some pedals. So no, it's not that at all.
It's not that. It's an event for women...
Yes.
...who think they might be bisexual but are living currently in straight relationships.
Not quite. It's for people who would usually identify as straight, virtually straight, if you will. Everything's on a spectrum these days, I suppose. Yeah. But who are intrigued by the idea of sexually playing with other women. And they have skirt club events, which are full-on evenings where everyone shows up in their glamorous lingerie and everything and does tequila body shots off each other and things get extremely saucy and X-rated.
They get X-rated.
Would you go as far to say
that intercourse occurs?
Intercourse occurs, but also lots of standing around and watching and being intrigued occurs. It's
right,
whatever you feel comfortable with.
It's interesting, lots of people isn't it? Are we the male equivalent of this event? You would assume that there would be intercourse.
Most
if you go along, you're like, well, I'm a bi-curious man, I'm not sure. That means you're going to have sex with a man, doesn't it? Whereas with women, I guess it's more of a, well, I'm just exploring, let's have a chat.
Most likely, although I'm sure there are some guys who've rocked up to gay events and haven't felt inclined to join in.
Yeah.
But Skirt Club does the full-on events where you're welcome to kind of get squelchy and delve into each other. Yeah. But it also does introductory events, if you will, called mini skirt, which is quite a cute idea, I think, where you go and you have drinks and you watch a burlesque performance or you get involved in a sexually themed workshop. But it's more about chatting to other women and gauging whether there might be some people there that you'd be interested in attending a bigger event with. So it's lots of like softly, softly, step by step, very controlled introduction to the potential idea of playing with another girl.
And may I ask if you've been before and if you got into the stage of playing with another girl?
I have been before and had a wonderful time and met loads of interesting people, but I discovered that I am disappointingly straighter than a Roman road.
As a result of being there, you just thought...
Yeah, I thought I was pretty straight anyway. I basically love the peen. Really love the peen so much, unfortunately.
I think we've got ourselves a hashtag.
Yeah, Alex Fox, I love the peen.
Just hashtag love the peen. I think if I went to an event for bi-curious men, even if I wasn't interested, I wouldn't leave without having a hand job since it was on offer.
What...
There's someone there prepared to give me one, you know, it's be like, well, all right then.
Why the hell not?
Why the hell not?
How far do you think you'd go in the realms of curiosity?
Well, funny you should mention that because we have a question that probes into areas that I would not wish to.
Oh, okay.
It is from Mike, who
Mike
says, I've been married for 7 years
And occasionally during foreplay, there's a little bit of anal play where my wife strokes my perineum and slips the tip of her finger in my anus. I find this quite enjoyable, just as well, isn't it, really? And would like to explore this further. I'm not sure, he says, that I'm ready for pegging. You're going to have to explain what the hell that is.
The act of doing your partner up the bum with a strap-on. So with a fake penis, with a dildo that right. you strap on.
So when he says, I'm not sure I'm ready for pegging, he does mean, I'm not sure I'm ready for my wife to penetrate my bum with a fake dildo.
Yeah, he's not at the stage for his wife to wear a dildo and slide that up his rear end.
So with that context fully explained, let me continue with the question.
Oh, there's more.
Yes. I wouldn't mind her probing my anus deeper and perhaps introducing some toys into the mix. So, Alex, how do I best bring this up with her? That's his question. I'm worried she may not be too keen, as the anus can be dirty and she may not want to fully go there. Have you got any suggestions for making my anus a bit cleaner? Should I be doing cleansing enemas? I realise that this isn't always possible in spontaneous lovemaking. I think it's not very romantic to take a pause for that, certainly.
There are many questions within this question, like sub-questions.
Let's deal first of all with how do I...
Is it separated by semicolons? I feel like that would be appropriate.
Let's deal first of all with how does he ask his wife to do a little bit more bum action.
I think his wife actually is probably going to be quite open to it. If she's already ferreting about with
already
her digits
in the
brown eye area, I don't think she's going to be too put off by it. Most women as well are quite well versed these days in knowing the fact that a man's G-spot or his prostate is actually located up his rear end. Mm. It's about the size of a walnut, and it depends on the gentleman, but it's usually about between 1.5 and 3 inches up the back passage.
I guess everyone's got a different attitude to it. I just don't want my girlfriend to put her finger anywhere near my bum hole. It doesn't appeal to me at all. And I struggle with it because I've read, just like everyone else has, the articles in GQ and Cosmopolitan saying, did you know the man's G-spot is halfway up his arse? And I'm like, I just don't. The idea of it makes me feel a bit weird.
Yeah, it's a fact that because the prostate is located up your bum, there's very good reason for many people to find it pleasurable. Plus, there's that idea of it being quite taboo, which many folks find exciting. But the juxtaposition
to
that...
For me, it's literally because that's where I poo out of.
Well, maybe feeling more clean might help people like you, Ollie, or like our, like the gent who's written to us. That will perhaps make him feel a bit more confident. And there are a variety of ways that you can make yourself feel a bit more squeaky clean in that area. I've got loads of gay friends who actually say that they wish their straight mates were more open to the idea of using enemas to flush out everything from their poo pipes.
Supposed to make you feel amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of people, if they've done that, I think will feel less worried that they're accidentally going to want to go to Brown Town. They're going to shit on the partner.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But with regard to Mike's issue, when do you do that? Do you go and seek professional enemas? You don't do it at home.
Oh, no, you can absolutely do it at home.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, there are all sorts of enemas you can buy, from very simple ones, which are essentially like a squeezy bulb with a little spout on it, mm-hmm. and you squirt a little bit of water up yourself as much as you feel comfortable with, and it washes you out that way, mm-hmm. to much more complicated devices that fit on the end of your shower head and things like that. If you do want to use an enema, I would suggest don't use any liquid other than just lukewarm water to begin with. People do use other solutions, but that area of the body is very sensitive.
And where does the waste go?
You hold the water inside yourself and then relieve yourself over the loo, or you can do it in the shower if you feel more comfortable with that. However, as much as that might make you feel more confident, it's not essential, especially not for low-level anal play, shall we say. Something like someone's finger.
Mm. Well, he wants to go a bit further than a finger, but not as far as a stiffy, doesn't he? So let's say it's a 3-inch toy. Would you be okay without cleaning, do you think?
As long as you'd voided your bowels and washed the area well. I mean, it's different people know their innards, but you don't necessarily have to do an enema. That's an option that might make you feel more comfortable and more confident. If Mike's lady friend has already been using her finger to stimulate his back door, what she might be looking for is further encouragement from him. So perhaps if he gives her some verbal cues by going, oh, that's nice, or maybe even just physically pushing back on her a bit.
That's interesting. Very often, like, you know, people say, when's the best time to bring this up with my partner? And the advice is sit down with them over a cup of tea
you know, as you said a few weeks ago, sit down over a cup of tea, say you really are interested in this particular fantasy. But sometimes the best time to bring it up is when it's actually happening.
If she's already doing that to him, I think he can encourage it more at the time.
Yeah.
It might be that she's concerned about whether he's enjoying it or not. It might be that she's concerned about whether he's gone to the loo or not. Or it might be, if she's a lady with longer fingernails, like I have, that she's concerned about accidentally scratching him. If that's the case, one trick that she can do is to pop a cotton wool ball in the end of a lubricated condom, slip that over her finger, and it essentially is like a little anal thimble to stop her from plucking on him.
What a neat trick.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing they did on Blue Peter, isn't it? That kind of life hack.
Speaking of lube, you should always use lube with any type of anal play because the butt doesn't produce its own moisture and it's also quite a sensitive area. You don't want to nick it. He might find it useful to either buy a specific lubricant designed for anal use, which tends to be thicker and longer lasting, or maybe consider something flavoured, because flavoured lubricants tend to have a stronger kind of fruity or desserty scent. And if either partner is worried about certain smells, if they're worried about that, then that will help cover things
then
up.
Why not mix it with a mulled wine scent as well?
Well, festive.
Yes. Well, I think we've answered his question very firmly.
Well, not quite yet, because he did say about toys as well.
Oh, yes.
Sales of anal toys have gone absolutely through the roof in recent years. All of the main...
Through the bottom, surely.
Yeah, There are a variety of different toys you can buy, from very simple butt plugs all the way up to vibrating prostate massagers. If you're looking for butt plugs for a first-time user, what I would say is go for something quite small. You can often buy them in sets of three, where they're like, kind of like Russian dolls.
Or drill heads.
Start small, and then you can work up to the medium size and the larger one. Always buy something with a flared base. It's very important that essentially has a stopper to make sure the butt plug doesn't disappear right up inside you.
Is it possible?
It is.
Surely it's only really possible if it's being shoved up there with something behind it.
No, because of the way the colon works, it can actually sort of vacuum things up, to speak. Yeah, it's very easy to get something stuck up your bum.
Well, with those words of wisdom, I feel it's an appropriate time to bring this week's Foxhole to an end. If you have a question for Alex Fox for next week's show, what can listeners do, Alex?
If they head over to the website, which is modernman.co.uk, they can click on the feedback form and send me any question that they like.
And like a big arsehole, you'll gobble it up. Alex, thank you as ever.
Cheers. I feel like this conversation has been quite anal.
Well, I think after all that, we could probably do with a song, a palate cleanser. But before we get to the music, just a reminder that if you're enjoying the show, and you must be if you've got this far, then remember, subscribe, review, tell your friends. That's the three-step process. To subscribe and get the show delivered straight to your smartphone every week, just head to modernman.co.uk and follow the links there to Pocket Casts and TuneIn. If you use Apple, we are at itunes.com/man. Leave us a review there, please. It really helps us reach out and get new listeners. If you've already left us a review, you can still keep telling your friends with the hashtag modernman on Twitter, or you can like my page on facebook.com/Ollie Mann. Our theme music is by Django Django from their self-titled debut album, and in the executive lifts of Modern Man Towers, we have one song piped in on repeat. It's this by Bear's Den. It is called Agape, and it's released on the 10th of December on Communion Records. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer Matt Hill, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Agape, please don't disappear. Yeah, I know that I've got this all wrong. I'm reaching out to touch you now, but baby, I'm clutching at straws, for I'm so Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.